said you talked in every church close in England. I mean, were you sent out talking by the people?
No. They used to write to our central office. It was a very nice office, the clergyman. But one of the most broad-minded, I don't mean sloppy thinking, but I mean really broad-minded men I ever met. And one of the most, his delivery was not very brilliant or exciting, but the material of what he gave us was so new, newly put and thought out to a conclusion that we were never let down, I think, on our material.
Was that called?
Yes, they were very, very pleased with the speakers we used to send them. So there are not many women speakers, and my job allowed me to go back and come by very late trains. I'd return many, many times to London by the milk train instead of going to work. And it really was a great experience, as well as very useful propaganda.
Yes.
Because one of the things I wanted to say to you before letting you get a chance was people, among the things that people don't realize there, and Miss Linda Walker agreed to me, I think, over this, was the extremely hopeless and low prospects for the constitutionals, the Nets, as we call them, who were just the ordinary, in the ordinary way, they'd be the ordinary suffragettes. And why did you need suffragettes on the top of that to advocate a good cause? Well, I think there could be many interests in politics where you could get the answers to that one. But one of the chief things was that if you've not got inside an organization, there may easily be a sort of spiral, descending spiral, against you, working against you. And the interesting thing was that it was never published. I don't think she says exactly this in her autobiography. Mrs. Pankhurst was in deadly terror of the men getting adult suffrage until the woman got it. She used to say to us, and I heard her and Chris Bell talking to half a dozen of us, of the most active people in Nottingham, and over tea and coffee after a meal by ourselves. And Mrs. Pankhurst was quite a different person from what anybody had met. She was, they got the picture that she was nicely dressed, but it wasn't only that. She had a very shrewd and unusual mind. And though she did go into some foolish excesses at the end of the of her career, I don't know why, but she always was a person who gave the best advice and best motives. And she was deeply concerned that we shouldn't put ourselves into the hands of the mercy of the adult suffragist before we had established the principle. And that's why she invented what I think is one of the cleverest slogans. She wasn't just clever, it was sincere. Every invention of a boat as it is or may be granted to men.
Yes.
She asked for neither more nor less, but real equality. And she, Christabel, too, the attitude that she gave to all her more intimate.
How did you get involved with Woman Suffrage first? And what was the first connection you had?
Well, mine was a very funny one. And it was, I was brought up by a very political father.
Yes.
Who was a political journalist who'd been assistant editor of the biggest newspaper, I think it then was, the Melbourne.
The Argus.
Yes. And not the Sydney Bulletin. That was very much quoted, was the most amusing and the wittiest paper. But for some of the suggestions about the history, and the Melbourne Argus was certainly as good as any. And I was brought up that I used to read all the different coloured newspapers in London. You can't imagine what they were like. In the evening, see, by the time I was about 7 or 8, I could walk into them. And I remember that, for example, the thing that was appealing to us so much. The Dreyfus case.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that was a tremendous education. And I must say for my father that I did know the Dreyfus case so well that I was able to help one of the reviewers in doing it about 50 years later without any further looking up to it. It was a marvelous thing. And then, of course, there were the jibes about the women neglecting their neighbours and their children. And I very soon learned for myself, when I went out to work or started debates at the Edinburgh University, that how very easy it was to hide neglect and to make a convenience of a thing if at the same time you were pretending that you had no obligations to it. That really seemed to me, that's a great deal seemed to me our position. And we had a debate at the university of somebody persuaded the non-militants. You see, one of the first things that the militancy was to wake up the non-militants.
Yes, yes.
And that's why the incident has been so hidden, that they drew their attention, the younger ones at once, and said, look here, what is happening? You have half a dozen very good, very distinguished people like Professor Stewart, who everybody knows, except you know Cotton.
Yes, I do. Okay.
He was an exceedingly good man, and he was a great friend for the women. And some of the new SRP or SDF men were also genuinely interested in the women. A great number of them were not. They were simply wanted the adult suffrage, and there was simply no room in there for the women to speak, and not necessarily, they say, because the men always knew better what they wanted, and they knew how to get it, which the women, from inexperience, very often didn't. But we had the benefit of some very excellent women who were keeping their position in the labour movement and at the same time wouldn't say a word against the suffragettes. And I remember Mary MacArthur was one of those friends. And then we had was marvellous because I got all my education in street propaganda there. Now, that's the second point I wanted to make here. The first one was the one I've already given. Yes, the danger of the adult suffrage. But the other one is about what we hope to do and what Mrs. Beck has made us do, and what we did do was to be the first people who made a direct appeal as voters to the working man. And we said, all right, the Nats can go on with the 3-4 stalwart members of Parliament, you see, and people who are giving the academic reasons for it. But we want people who would do something here and now. Find out what's wrong. Why are we stuck? And actually go for them. And that was the second point that Mrs. Baker's was so very useful. The people, remember the street talk, talking in the streets.
Yes.
I remember hearing a terrible, extraordinary voice in Nottingham. They had the largest marketplace in England in those days. It wasn't the country bank. And I was on my knees with a crowd of the usual little boys talking the meeting for the next day on the papers. And it was my consultant in surgery. She said, Dr. Fairfield, what are you doing in the knees, on your knees in the marketplace? I said, you come to the meeting, you'll see. You'll be surprised. And it does some great credit that though they were considered a very posh, rather snobbish lot, all under the Duchess of Portland, the famous Duchess of Portland, and the Duke and such like folk. I never had the slightest interference with how I spent my time, as long as it wasn't, I wasn't exceeding the time I was.
Were you a Nat first, and then did you join the WSP?
No, that was, these were the suffragists. And none of the Nats ever took their papers, except just I think it was the last they decided. It was a good stunt. But it was a very good stunt. They got to talking, got an introduction to all sorts of people, and it showed them in a very simple, rather crude manner that you were really prepared to make conventions.
Yes.
And then the third point is, because the first two points. Third point was, allied to the last. What was I saying?
You're saying the third point.
You came out
of Manchester when you were in the WSPU in Manchester.
Yes.
And you were saying there were three points.
Yes.
The third point you were getting round to talking about.
Yes, and the third point was that we really did pay the men in the street the compliment of coming down and talking to them. And oddly enough, they were greeted with catcalls and cabbages and rotten eggs and that sort of thing. And we thought we weren't going unless we had about 5 minutes of that. It did mean that the story really got home, and they were—they really felt it was a sort of honor. It brought them in touch with the still prevalent notion that a parliamentary politics were very much a middle-class affair, and I can remember a lovely thing that happened when I was in Yorkshire. And there was a man in the crowd kept on interrupting and heckling me in sort of way. And you're only middle class women. This is a middle class women's hobby. And I heard that. So, and then I found the correct answer was, well, if there's an east wind blowing and the temperature is so and so, it's a very funny hobby for middle class women to take up. And in any case, we don't ask, you'll never have heard anybody in our red, white and green flag. Recommending votes for middle class women only. It's when you decide that a certain status is necessary for women, and the women attain that status, you will get it. And then another voice from the crowd, you begin again. Another voice from the crowd interrupted, either. You shut up. And listen to what the lady says to you. And we all know that vote for donkey, we read tyrant today. And it was a complete collapse of the opposition in everything. Of course it was the perfect answer.
Yes, yes. Did you learn to speak on the women's platforms then? Was that the first place where
you... Oh, yes. Quite a lot. I couldn't very much when I got to London, because I was then an employee of the LCC. And quite rightly, they were strict and really strict about their staff not taking any part in their official staff, so to speak.
Yes.
Not taking any part in.
Yes.
It would have been impossible, as we see now, to cut out politics and dangerous. It doesn't matter.
I really want to ask you, how did you first get connected with the WSPU? Did somebody influence you to join or what?
Hello, my dear. How I got... I was telling you that I'd been educated in a very unusually political atmosphere. But it was, as far as women's work was concerned, my father, I regret to say, was no better than he should be. He was...
anti, was he?
Yes, he was definitely anti. He thought that women could be left to chance, you see, and people being kind to them, that sort of thing. And when I went to this debate, it was that... I think it was on... We took Mrs. Pankhurst's wording that the vote... should be given to women as orders it may be granted to men. And I regret to say that during that short evening, I was entirely converted by my own supporters. They were the most eloquent as I sat there and listened. I got angrier and angrier about the complete lack of with the results have been, and the complete lack of responsibility and the complete lack of understanding of the whole situation. And within a very, I started reading up the thing which I had, there's a controversy which I had never done really before. And I was so absolutely sickened by it, and never again did I feel the slightest desire to be an anti-suffragist.
So you were an anti at first, were you?
I certainly was, yes.
This was in a debate at university, was it? Or where was this debate?
The debate was in the Students' Union.
At Edinburgh, I see.
And we had some very good people, but the best were in favour of it already. It was John Bright's nephew. And he was son of an Italian doctor called Mr. Pagliotti. And another so I can't pretend to be learned. That was as simple as the way I got it. I hadn't looked into it before, and directly I did, with any sort of attachment, I could only come to one conclusion that there was. It doesn't matter, because I've asked the nurse if I could stay on. Is there anything else you want to do?
Yes. So did you join the WSPU straight away, or did you wait till you went to Manchester?
I waited till I went to Manchester. But I also joined the Edinburgh one, which was very well run. Lady Rhonda was a great person in that. She came up and visited us and gave us a great... She was such a great speaker. I forget what her name was. It was her first husband that she had for divorce.
Yes.
But she...
Hey, her name was Richard.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yes.
She was a very fine woman. Mm. But a lot of it, such a lot of it, came back to the fact that women were given a lower status and lower payment. One began to realize the importance of the low payment. It wasn't only that it meant starvation for many women, but it meant a definite recognition of status. And that was one of the things that the medical world never got the credit for. But we had to fight for it. It seemed so impossible to the other women. And it seemed to be holding them back. And we said, no, you're never really going to say until you've got this. And if you've got this, if once local authorities or public bodies have to pay women at the same rate as men, they'll very soon see that they get the same value.
Yes, yes. But Manchester was your first post, was it?
Pardon?
Manchester was your first post as a doctor.
Yes, yes it was. Mm-hmm. And the Hankers had gone to London by that time and had flourishing WSP in London. They left behind them an organisation that was not only really wide. We did a tremendous lot of propaganda, street speaking and that sort of thing. Going to meetings, Sunday meetings of the ILP or the... who wouldn't mind inviting a WSPU, that is Women's Social Political Union. They wouldn't mind inviting her and taking what she might be, middle class or whatever it was, that they... of course, naturally wanted to keep away from any obligations to the more educated women. And a great deal of difficulty and delay was caused by this.
So did anyone persuade you to join the WSPU in Manchester, or did you just join straight away as soon as you went there?
Yes, we had. It was literally true. And I must say it was far more credit to women than has ever been acknowledged. That they worked together in the most extraordinary way, in spite of very deep-rooted variations about the function of the vote and industrial questions. But we used to talk it over among ourselves informally, and it was extraordinary to what an extent bigger issue really took over and prevented any minor or petty disagreements.
Yes. So did you become a speaker? Did you speak on platforms in Manchester?
Oh, yes. And I found one or two the other day, some extraordinary bodies, little societies, if they had a crop up in the place. Because, of course, it was a very fascinating time. It's apt, people are apt to forget them now, as though they were, this was the first occasion, this present time, the first occasion when people, young people, were passionately interested in social questions and felt deeply about injustice and so on. Well, you see, we had the most marvelous new ideas us after the interwar period and so on.
But did you know Mary Gawthorpe very well?
Oh, I'm so interested in you mentioning her name. I've never met anybody. Yes, it's all right.
That we talk about Mary Gawthorpe?
Yes, because it just happened that Mary Gawthorpe was our star speaker. Manchester. She was much more than Leeds. She really came from Leeds. But she was over in Manchester nearly every week. And she was the most fascinating native person. Did Kaka tell you about her?
Well, yes, she mentioned her.
Yes. Tremendously taken.
Was she? Yeah.
And she was a very, very, she was a brilliant speaker. She was, had a good platform wit. And she really did say, when the man threw a cabbage at her, and she picked it up and looked at it very sadly and said, I'm afraid some poor gentleman has lost his head. And please, thank you very much.
Was she nice looking to look at?
Oh, she was, yes, she was very small, and she was dainty, and had a lot of pretty fair hair, and she dressed in what we could consider rather as second-rate style. But you see, a person didn't really begin to dress unless they became middle class, which was the family. So it wasn't so hard to support then.
Well, did you take an office or take a post in the WSPU? Were you an official in the WSPU?
No. I was going to say, it sounds terrible that I was boasting, but what had happened was that I consulted Mrs. Frankhurst when I got to London and said, I'm quite ready, as we're advocating so-called militancy, naturally to take part in it. But I've got to remember this, that I belong to a very difficult profession that is fighting its own name every day. And if you're not a success, you're an absolute failure. As some of the early medical women who have never got any good job at all. And I said, I've been brought up by my mother. My father died early and after long illness, was very impoverished. And I had two younger sisters. And it was absolutely essential for me that I should at least be possible of money. And you see, even for a woman to keep herself in those days was hardly allowed.
So, did she agree?
So, Mrs. Pankhurst at once said, she said, my dear, you will be much the most useful to us if you keep your increase, your status in the medical profession. So, no reason to think about that again. She said, we have plenty of volunteers for what she wanted to keep as a very minor side. So I was quite happy about that, and I didn't so much like Crystal at all.
Really?
I expect you would come across that.
Yes.
She was a most conceited, self-centered woman, and had a sister, Sylvia, was simply crazy. She was a sort of early communist.
Yes.
And she was a crazy kind of person, and to this day in the Communist Party.
One person you knew was Mrs. Belmont, wasn't it? You mentioned Mrs. Belmont in your interview with Miss Walker, who was influential on Christabel. Who was Mrs. Belmont? Did you know that?
Yes. What really happened, and this is, do you mind not recording this?
Yes, I'm
course, there was also that bit of side that the press, the kind of Sunday press was always trying to build up. And we were faced with the difficulty, Clarence Beck's mentioned, of sitting on our bayonets. And the bayonets began to, they most unfortunately, someone, including Crispell, I believe Mrs. Pankhurst was the gamester, took to setting fire to the sea of being. But of course, all the boats that were around were worth one burnt baby. And we all felt that, and were, they loyally continued to do it, but they, it became a was tending to become a quite different organization. There would have been some very big changes if it had gone on another 6 months because of what I think was the mistake of it. And also, it's part of the intrigue of politics that you have always this difficulty. That if a violent reaction hasn't a quick effect, you can't hope by making your reactions more and more and more violent.
I agree. I think so.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. You've got to go on and on and on, and it gets worse and worse and worse. There's no end to it, is there?
You could see that in Spain.
Yes, you can, or in Ireland.
Yes.
But did you join the Church League as an alternative?
Yes, I grew up in London. Small organizations, of which the first and very successful one was the Actresses. And it was called
the Actresses Franchise League, wasn't it?
And it had some excellent speakers. Of course, the women were accustomed to speak. The audiences came to see them, and they talked, on the whole, they talked very good sentences. And that was a great success. Then, some people, of whom I was one, we got interested in what the Church of England was doing to help the women, as it had never done before. And the Church League suffrage started under Mr. Green, a most excellent man, a master Protestant on things, and he, with half a dozen of different people.
Yes.
My dear.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's the occupation therapist. She should have come before us. She should have come this morning. Then we found, as we found in other directions, there was a tremendous amount of sympathy and understanding, because especially as we began to point out the poorness of results that the devout and unaggressive nets collected. One very good example that I think Mrs. Pankhurst used to mention in her speeches was, you know, the Thomas Foote's Song of the Shirt?
Yes.
Well, it was one of the most pathetic and pitiful poems this has ever written. And it only described what was the fact, even when I saw traces of it when I went to the East End. And that, I think, that was not followed for 30 years by the any legislation or any action.
Yes.
I can't remember. I think it was 30 years or even longer. And you see that the Trade Sports Act was brought into existence, which enabled people to development
to arbitrate
to claim trade, to sweat trade,
yes.
And then saw side of your life, brought in to the moral code.
Yes.
Whatever it is, whether it may be following the Jesuits, or it may be particular Baptists, or whoever they are, as long as you bring that in, you see, it becomes an extremely important thing to doing right and justice to people. Because we found, in the curious way, which I never could quite understand, since I was quite small, that justice is the most unpopular, or considered the most uninteresting virtue.
Yes.
And it ought to be, of course, one of the most important. It has been from time to time. Of course, it's frightfully misused. You can call anything just that you feel in yourself. And this is probably the reason why it has remained unpopular.
How did you get involved in the Church League? Who got you to join it?
Yes.
Did you join because you knew Reverend Green, or what?
How did I join up with the... I think it was against some people in Manchester.
Yes.
And even more when I got to London, I found that some of the people... Oh, yes. Our particular branch arose from a thing that I had always been a supporter of, and that is having ordained people in the women in the Church of England. And we saw that simply couldn't come. So it was useless to regard that as a practical matter for the time being, but it could be. The extraordinary thing was that if you read the newspapers at the time, that there was very, very little opposition to the suffragists on any moral ground.
Yes.
Very, very little, very few of the bishops would take anything in any trouble. They would take trouble once we got them, talked to them, and some of them did act extremely well and do us a tremendous lot of good in the House of Lords.
You were actually chairman of the Executive Committee, weren't you?
Yes, I think I was.
Yes. Well, what did you have to do? Did you speak for the Church League? Or
I don't remember.
It's a long time ago, isn't it?
I don't really remember. We used to have meetings dealing with the whole problem, see, and chiefly with the kept off the militancy issue.
Yes.
As far as possible, we did not mix them up. And on our committee, we had militants and anti-militants. But women really showed at that time, and I think they always will show, real capacity for sinking irrelevant issues.
Yes, yes. But did you go to the church congresses and influence, attend the church conferences and influence?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Because I remember speaking at a congress, the church congress, at Nottingham.
Oh, yes, yes.
Or was it Leicester, where it was meeting there. And I know I didn't exaggerate that I was asked to speak, given the good place at the chief meeting, because the person who spoke directly after me was Archbishop Temple.
Oh, yes.
Davidson, I mean.
Oh, yes.
And he was an extraordinarily nice man. And a very nice man. And he was very simple, very direct, and he always brought things up to a very practical, decent level of sound behavior. You know, what a Christian really was. He was always very good indeed. I liked Archbishop Temple.
Do you remember Claude Hinscliffe?
Emily. Mrs. Sags, trying to remember his name, that's for the only reason I didn't know. He and his wife, and the very nice Mrs. Hinchcliffe, did you know her?
No, no, but I've read about him, you see. Oh, he was quite active, wasn't he?
They both were extraordinary.
What sort of people were they? Were they evangelical Anglicans, or what sort of?
No, I think we call them moderately high.
I see,
Most of our people
were they?
Yes.
Were they?
But we had some of them, not very many, I remember. And I had a grandmother who was the king's sister. And Randall was all in misery to her family. So I was rather prejudiced, I'm afraid, against them.
Were they mostly Anglo-Catholics in the church?
Oh, yes, yes.
Were they?
They were all kinds.
I see.
And
yes.
they really did work.
All different types of people.
Yes.
Yes, I see.
Really did work.
Yes. That's very interesting. Are you sure you must be getting to
creeks and cranks and all kinds of stuff? But we had a lot of quite serious, worthwhile people.
What was the relationship of the Fabian Women's Group to the women's movement? What was the relationship of the Fabian Women's Group to the women's movement?
Oh, well, that, of course, was very complicated, very individual.
Yes.
And that was the thing that Miss, according to our present day ideas, was one of the things that would be tied it up. So I'm afraid it's one of the things we need to say it's also splits and splinters. But it did to a certain extent. There were a certain number of Labour women who would never touch the WSPU, but it didn't accept to go entirely with the SDIF, the
Prophecy
of Russia. Yes.
ILP.
And, that didn't prevent both the Church League and the WSPU from having a very wide band of recruits that covered all those things.
Mm. One other thing I wanted to ask you, why are so many doctors antis? Why were there so many doctors anti-suffrage?
Anti-suffrage?
Yes.
Doctors?
Lots of doctors were, weren't they?
Oh, well, they had very bad training as medical students. Very often that sort of thing, you see. And very few of them had any sort of real political knowledge. But I don't think they were worse off than any profession.
Yes, it's just professional jealousy, is it? I mean,
yes.
This desire to keep women out of the profession.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Because I've noticed doctors are quite often active in the anti-suffrage movement, one way or another.
Well, doctors have a great deal of interest in themselves in using the very nice doctors on the chiefs here by being not sufficiently imaginative. In politics,
yes, well, that's quite right.
And I think they could have done if they'd been a little bit more politically neutral. They could have done much better with the National Health Service. It's made much more out of it if they had taken a wider outlook on it.
Was your own career ever hindered by being suffrage?
No, I'm sure it was never hindered by being a suffragist, but it was hindered by being very difficult for a woman to get started, you see. And I was luckier than many of them, you see. And I was able to get a fair run. The LCC was very anxious that they were giving other doctors a good run for their money. But I'm afraid they just still did come to many other things. The interesting thing was that our professional training in obstetrics was also the best of the terms with the men's medical federation. And I don't think we ever did anything that they were opposed to. Austin Biddles in the chair. And Augustine Biddles said to Fennels, "No, that lady from Austin, about sons, I forget the question," he said, "I would much rather have had him out her talk at this time." It's pretty weird, Austin.
You just asked him about his attitude to boats who were in the
chair. Yes.
I see. Never did any house burning or anything like that?
Well, never done anything to eat fire, whatever it was. It's just started the way it was. I don't think it's justifiable. I think some of the things they did, like